you were, you didn't even get to the point where you, that you went back to the U.S. and the general, whoever called you out red, and when you were doing some menial job and he got you to do something worthwhile.
Yes.
And I know that story, so.
Yep, I've had some interesting experiences.
Yep. Well, you've had some interesting experiences since you got out as well.
Yes, yes.
So I'm hoping I still can remember as much as you did if I'm lucky enough to make it to your age. So.
What was your position in the crew? You were a pilot?
No, I was a tail gunner.
Tail gunner.
And a ball tray gunner.
Okay, okay. I was going to ask you if any of your war experiences affected your choice of career after the war. Not really, you know. You just kind of worked your way into your different career positions.
Not really. You know, peripherally, it's always been involved to some extent. But to have any major impact, no.
Well, you know, I guess at that point you had millions of guys getting out of the service, so you weren't the only one.
Yes.
But the story I was alluding to, which you might not have heard, maybe you'll tell it again, was after you finished up your missions and you went back to the States and you were doing some menial job and some high-ranking guy came and saw you. Refresh my memory on that.
I was watching the tail of a B-17 and somebody said, "Red, what the goddamn hell are you watching the tail for?" Turned around and it was, at that time, it was Colonel Frank Armstrong.
Oh, it was Frank Armstrong.
Because he had awarded me, he was my group commander.
Yeah.
And he had awarded me a couple of medals. And,
right. But keep up, he hadn't heard the story.
What happened then?
Tell him what happened next.
Well,
I'll be back then, y'all stay tall.
Colonel Armstrong left with the base commander, and either that afternoon or the next day, I got summoned to the base commander's office, and he had a complete attitude adjustment.
Now, why was that?
Because Armstrong
went shooting him out.
Oh, I see.
And Armstrong later on turned out being a general. So he chewed him out. And so the colonel had an attitude adjustment. And then I became the engineer on the standardization board. And the stand board was a board that checked all of the instructors to make sure that they covered all the information that should be covered and to the same, in the same manner and to the same detail. Oh, I've had a number of helpful acquaintances.
Well, Armstrong was a good friend to have.
Yes, yes.
Yep. Did you interact with him after you went back in the service? You came out of the service and then you went back in the service.
I didn't have any relationships that I remember. I don't think so. No.
So how long did you do that before you got out?
I have to stop and think. About 2 years, I think.
Yeah. So how many years were you in all together?
21 years, 6 months, and 7 days.
Well, and what'd you end up as?
A GS-15.
Is that right?
Yeah. In the Pentagon, had a section in the Pentagon. And that section was responsible for trying to get the commands to all teach the information the same way to the same people. No, I had some interesting experiences.
So when did you leave? You were in D.C., obviously. When you were in the Pentagon, when did you leave the D.C. area?
I can't remember the year.
Okay. Well, I didn't get to D.C. until way after that. I got D.C. in 1990. And I lived in Kensington, Maryland. So I wasn't too far from Bethesda Naval Hospital.
No, I left to D.C. I retired in D.C. And that was in 1963.
I was a mere lad.
You know, I want to get off this episode just a moment. I want to thank you for your way you organized everything.
Well, thank you.
Information you've shown like in here right now.
Well, you're more than welcome. It's been a lot of work, but it's fun to have you guys come and get to talk with you. And of course, I'm lucky enough that I go to Atlanta every so often and get to visit with you then. You got to get that book published.
Big Bird.
You got to get your history published, the book you've been working on.
Yeah. Well, you get a copy.
Okay.
What year was the first reunion that you came to?
Remember the first reunion you came to?
It was sometime, I think it was 1990.
Okay.
Uh-huh. See, I didn't know there was any such thing as a reunion.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I was off doing my thing, and so.
How did you find out about the reunion?
Beg pardon?
How did you find out about the reunion? Did Russell Strong find you, or did somebody, one of your crew members, find you and say, hey, come to the reunion?
No, I wanted to find my crew members. Uh-huh. And so I was looking for them, and they incidentally were trying to find me as well. And I met them, and, you know, again, for the first time since 1944.
Mm-hmm.
One thing led to another.
You know, my father didn't say much to me about the war. Of course, I wasn't born until 58. And I find a lot of people say that their parents didn't say much about the war. Why do you think that was? They just put it behind you and you're ready to move on with life and get on with your career and your families and such?
Well, you know, I saw a lot of guys get killed and mm-hmm. wounded and that kind of thing. And you just didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to see anything about it. Mm-hmm. When I got out, I went back to Auburn, and I had to give a 2-minute talk. That was the requirement,
mm-hmm.
to give a 2-minute talk about your experience. And, you know, that was the
very
only
good
thing I said for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out from a number of other people that they went through the same kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. Very emotional.
Oh, yeah.
Very emotional. It's probably the main reason.
You saw me today. So
yes.
I still get that.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, certainly appreciate you sharing, because generation like mine, and of course my children were here, and now my grandchild is, and we need to appreciate what y'all have done to try to communicate what it was like. So appreciate that.
And I've said it several times. I said, you guys are the greatest generation, but I'm in the luckiest generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you guys came home, America was king. In the 50s and 60s, you know, we were, nobody would mess with us. Then a little bit different today with all those Muslims who are crazy and trying to call us the great Satan, but most of the world doesn't think it that way. I went to Normandy finally for the last spring on that Thurlow trip, and that was quite a moving thing as well. You know, you guys had high casualty rates, but D-Day was a terrible day.
Well, as you know, I stayed in the service.
Right.
And one of my assignments was back to Germany. And as what I did, and then also I had an assignment in France. And the thing that I did was I tried to make to all the major World War II sites, especially those funeral sites, burial sites.
Right.
And I visited, you know, there were a couple of dozen sites.
Yep. Well, we had Phil Mundell with us when we went over to Normandy, and we arranged for a tour, an all-day tour. And the gal, you sign up at this one little corner where two or three different companies are, and we signed up with one of them. And she gave us a ride up to the airport, where the train station where they were going to start. And we got up there, and the guy who owns the company, he has like six different vans. And he found out that Phil was a World War II veteran. And he asked the woman, and said, "You didn't charge him, did you?" She said, "Well, yeah." He said, "Give him his money back. He's already paid."
Yeah. Well, I went through some of that.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no question about it, you did. And, you know, you were good and you were lucky to make it through. So, sounds like you had a few close calls, but you made it.
And the people were proud of the fact we made it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What years were you in Germany when you went back, you know, after the war? What year were you in?
When are you guys taking off?